Welcome to Pittsburgh Youth Media on Youth Express, recording live from SLB Radio. This is Mykia Way, and I'm in the 8th grade. I go to Manchester Academic Charter School.
My name is Mason. I'm in 12th grade at Winchester.
Hey, I'm Riley. I'm a senior at SciTech.
I'm Tyena. I'm a junior at Montour.
I'm Tyena. I'm a junior at Montour.
I'm Marley. I'm in 7th grade at Elizabeth Ford Middle School.
I'm Ayana. I go to Manchester Academic Charter School, and I'm in 8th grade.
It is March 25th. Today there was a walkout to protest the acquittal of the cop who shot Antoine Rose II three times. The protest was super cool. It was really cool to see, like, kids organizing something against something they were upset about, but it was also, like, very deeply upsetting. One of the chants, "What do we want justice, when do we want it now?" And then asking you to go, "What's his name? Antoine Rose II. What's his name? Antoine Rose II. How old was he? 17. And it's like, that doesn't really sink in immediately. So it's just you keep repeating it for like a couple hours, and it's like, wow, it's really upsetting. You know, sometimes you can't really grasp the full extent of that until you're with a bunch of other people who are going through similar emotions, like working their way through it.
It wasn't really that shocking, because you were kind of hoping that he would obviously be charged, but it wasn't shocking that he got away with it, because that's what usually happens.
I was reading a couple articles about this today, and most of them were saying things about how cops rarely or barely get punished for shootings.
Kind of makes you, I guess for lack of a better term, wonder about how much things really aren't on the level. Because there's video of someone running away and being shot three times, and that somehow wasn't enough.
Cops have a certain law that protects them from being charged with killing people. They're protected because they're a cop. Nobody wants to kill somebody. Yeah. Nobody wakes up in the morning and be like, oh, I'm going to kill a certain kid because of his skin color. They choose that decision at that time. They choose to do that at that time.
I haven't seen the video, but it might have just been like his instant assumption was like, oh, well, this kid was in a car used to make a hit and run earlier today. So this kid must have been involved, and he's dangerous, and I'm just going to shoot him. No questions asked.
Which, like, even if he did, that crime does not then mean summarily execute someone.
Well, I first thought about the narrator, just the person that filmed it, because she was like, oh, why are they shooting them? They're running away. Why are they shooting them? And I was like, yeah, why would you be shooting at someone who's running away? It didn't seem very threatening. Someone's running away from you.
I felt like the cops were being lazy. Like, you could at least, like, ran after him, but they was on the job being lazy, basically. And you didn't have to kill him. You could at least shot him in his leg or his thighs.
Yeah, I always wonder that, like, why they don't shoot for some non-vital part of the body.
They say he was, like, good in school. So if you make one bad mistake, then that's, like, you're done with. He was, like, hanging with people. I called them idiots, basically, because it was just hanging with idiots. Black folks have to be more careful, because some white people, they think of us as monsters, basically. Monsters, like, every black man has to be a gangster, or we're not going to succeed or anything. They think of us as basically a weapon.
There's a lot, to your point, people have built-in biases based on who they're raised around, just because, like, if you grow up around people who are only white or only black or only whatever race, you're inherently better at, like, reading their faces, reading their emotions, so you're more comfortable around them. So I'm sure there are lots of racist cops who think exactly like that. But I think a lot of it, too, is that just that subconscious thing you're not even aware of till you're in a stressful situation, and then it comes out.
As a black community, you do have to be more careful, because at a young age, your parents, like, they give you that the talk. Like, how you should be in the car. You're set to think, what should you do when a police person come up to you? You need to be calm, do what they say. You need to be more careful of what you do, who you're around, and make sure people don't see you doing certain things, because they obviously will use that against you.
Being a white person, I've never gotten that.
We should change the law first. Like, we need to know about the law so we can change the law. And also, as the black community, we need to build trust into each other. Instead of going against each other, we stick together to make a change. People, like, they want to support in that moment.
they don't want to help out unless something big happens.
Yeah, basically.
There have been, like, billboards made in certain counties of Pennsylvania about, like, oh, it happened, get over it, or, like, racist statements about Antoine Rose.
Which is ridiculous. I had this discussion in school today, like, before a lot of the school went out on the walkout with someone where they went, the verdict was reached legally, so why protest it? And what we eventually got to as a conclusion was that's the purpose of protesting, walking out, whatever, making a demonstration. Just because something's legal doesn't mean it's okay, doesn't make it right. That's basically what I think a good response is to anyone who goes, oh, get over it sort of thing, that just because a court said it's okay doesn't make it correct. I think a big part of it, too, is just letting everyone else know that they're not the only one who feels this way. Because at my school, there was, for the walkout, it started off as, like, slowly kids leaving the building, and the more kids left, the more kids ended up leaving, and it just kind of snowballed. And then once we got there, we all see each other, and it's like, I didn't know you felt this way about this issue sort of thing. I found out a lot of my friends feel the same way. A lot of people who aren't my friends feel the same way, and it was just a nice to know that, like, people care.
Like, at the protests, like, I saw people, like, I didn't like already. So it was nice to know that people are good. People can be good even if I don't like them. And we can still agree on things.
I live in an area where it's not easy to get to the walkouts. And we don't have any protests organized in our area. It's, like, the only thing that we are able to do, really, is tell people about it. And, like, talk about it on social media so people will see it.
So, basically, a couple of students from my school are writing down names of how many people would protest if we had a walk. And there was, like, a good amount of people. And so we're going to have shirts and wristbands and stuff, not just for Antoine Rose, but as a community. But we're going to march from the Sharon Hines house to our elementary down Manchester, then walk back. We did this, like, last time when our Florida shooting happened, but we had a silent walk, basically. So we wanted to make our own protest. I want our white and black community to come together and stand as one.
Should police have a knowing of where they're going, or, like, what area they're going to be stationed at, or should just be thrown there? Blindly, yes.
I totally agree that more knowledge of the community can only be helpful, but then you run into the hypothetical of issue of what if no one from the neighborhood wants to be a policeman, or what if more people from this neighborhood want to be a policeman than from this neighborhood, because then you have, like, 20 over here and 2 over here. That sounds like a really good solution, but I don't know how it could be feasibly applied, because you run into the problem of numbers fairly quickly, I think.
I don't think it should be required for them to be from the neighborhood, but it should be, like, preferred. So if there's two candidates about equal skill and one's from the neighborhood and one is not, then they should choose one from the neighborhood.
But then there comes with the problem, like, if you knew a person's mom, you don't feel like you want to arrest them. So that comes with the problem, like, you don't want to arrest somebody you know by family or blood or whatever.
I mean, I'd argue that's kind of a good thing. I think less arrests is a good thing.
The 1930s and 40s, our communities were separate. Like, there was the lower hill, and there was, like, the higher part of the hill. Say if you're at the lower hill, their community was, like, didn't have no structure or anything. Like, their houses was messed up. There was cracks in their windows. Like,
when it's like that, you become more comfortable and, like, you normalize the situation and you stay where you are until somebody comes out and be like, this is not right or whatever, and choose to merge it together again.
Antoine Rose was one example of Pittsburgh being, like, a segregation thing, because I felt like if you're black, basically known as a gangster or a weapon to, like, your community, basically.
Like, there's definitely points of overlap, but, like, Homewood or Rankin or Wilkinsburg definitely are majority black, or, like, Squirrel Hills, majority white or, like, Jewish.
Yeah. And I was not aware of how segregated the city was by, like, neighborhood for most of my life until earlier this year in Spanish class to teach us the terms of homogeneous and heterogeneous. He used the example of Pittsburgh neighborhoods, and that had just never occurred to me because my school had a relatively diverse group of people, and I don't have any friends that live in my neighborhood, so I just kind of always filled that in. But then once he pointed that out, I went back and I looked at the neighborhoods and I went, oh yeah, we are very separated. It was so easy to not notice.
Well, I think it was easier to be unified about Tree of Life just because just numbers. It's easy. If people can understand that, it's more obviously impactful, also racially motivated. But I guess to explain to adults how the youth feels, I feel like walking out and protesting is a good way of showing it.
It's rare for me to have a conversation about it that doesn't end with the other person understanding it at least a little more. Last night, I had family over and there was this big discussion about it. And all the adults were like, well, I want some more information on it. What possible information could have made this okay? Like, even if he was the one in the shooting, that doesn't change the situation in any meaningful way. And I feel like that resonated with them to at least some degree. I think just raising the question, raising the discussion, even if it doesn't work immediately, is a huge step in making people understand just because they have to engage with the question themselves.
I feel like more black-on-black crime in, like, black community is more praised than normalized because it's in songs and it's in this. But then you don't really hear about, like, if it's a policeman shooting a black man in a song, like, it being fantasized and all of that.
Mm-hmm. The power dynamic between a cop and a civilian. Anybody killing anybody is bad. A cop can stop you whenever they want, can search you, can they have automatic power over you that you can't really resist the same ways, citizen to citizen.
Usually with, like, white-on-white crime, it's usually in the story, like, man just shot another man.
Yeah.
Yes. But when it's black-on-black crime, you bring in their race.
There was a really good two articles that illustrated that, I thought, really well. Just, like, the phrasing of headlines, how they put certain issues into it, mm-hmm. where there was one, it's violence erupts after police shooting on whatever campus, and the other one is police shooting on campus. The first one is almost suggesting that the police shooting wasn't violent. It's like it's like allowed or okay in some way. To your point, it excludes a lot of stuff because it will generate more controversy, make it a racial issue when they can. They won't when they don't think they could get away with it.
In the short term, I think everyone should go to the protests, to the walkouts if you can. I went today, and I know a bunch of my friends went today. So if you can go to that, go to that. Long term, particularly like for white people, to just be aware of like other people's issues. Don't be ignorant on purpose.
I guess piggybacking off that, it's a small thing, but recently I realized, where I just like sat and really learned a lot and listened to people, that I don't have the most full perspective on what's going on. For a while, it kind of was easy to just subconsciously feel like these problems weren't as big a problem anymore just because I didn't see them in my life because, like, I'm lucky in that the school I go to is not full of terrible people, I guess, or, like, I don't run into that on a daily basis because it's not something that affects me. So you can just kind of subconsciously not even ignore it but just assume it's not an issue. A thing that just everyone could do is to occasionally sit back and question that and see if that's really things are getting better or if it's an issue of perspective or if it's a mixture of both, just so there can be awareness and if there is an issue, we can fix it.
That concludes this episode of Pittsburgh Youth Media on Youth Express, recording live from SLB Radio. Special thanks to everyone here, basically.
Youth Power Collective and One Hood Media.
Our friend Eliza. I assume she's part of one of those two groups, which she helped organize the walkout today.
You're listening to Youth Express.
Catch the future.